Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, April 28th, 2022. Burn ban in effect. No ground fires by order of Presidio County. Big Bend National Park reveals preliminary plans for All New Chisos Mountains Lodge by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Big Bend National Park. Last week, officials from Big Bend National Park hosted a public virtual meeting to share a first look at the future of the 1964-built Chisos Mountains Lodge. While much is still up in the air, park officials shared in the meeting they were leaning toward constructing a new lodge as opposed to renovating the existing structure. The existing lodge is dilapidated in its old age, and public health officials have flagged it for safety concerns. But the required renovations would be so extensive and costly that replacing the structure altogether has turned out to be the more practical option. Plus, a replacement would give the park the opportunity to build a lodge better able to accommodate a growing number of visitors. We started off with the idea that if we can rehabilitate this, that is the preferred goal. It is a historic building, but that's not really looking very positive, said Park Superintendent Bob Krumenacker. Big Bend National Park was awarded $77 million in 2020 from Outdoors Act, which allocates energy development revenue to national park infrastructure projects. The act was created to address growing deferred maintenance backlogs at national parks around the country. Of the total $77 million granted, the national park will allocate over $22 million to the new lodge and over $54 million to rehabilitate the park's water systems. Tom Vandenberg, Chief of Interpretation and Visitor Services for the National Park, kicked off the meeting by introducing the project as well as its leads, Krumenacker and Debbie Cooper, principal from Architectural Resources Group, to a Zoom meeting room of over 100 curious attendees. Presenters discussed the history of the lodge, issues surrounding the current structure, proposed designs for a new lodge, and concluded with an audience Q&A. The Chisos Mountains Lodge currently serves as a landing pad for visitors to the basin, complete with restaurant, gift shop, bathrooms, storage, and concessionaire offices. While there is no actual lodging in the building, motel and cabin guests do check in and out of the facility. The adjacent motel units and visitor center are not a part of the lodge replacement project, but could be considered for a remodel in a later phase. Once we identify exactly what the scope of the funded elements of this project are, we're going to step back a little bit and look at what else is needed in the basin, said Krumenacker. The lodge has been in structural decline for years as a result of being built upon unstable soils, and a significant increase in park visitation has rendered the facility inadequate, said park officials, who began seriously considering a renovation or replacement of the lodge a few years ago. Krumenacker said when the lodge was first built in the 60s, the park was experiencing one-sixth of its current visitation. There's been continued movement throughout the building because the foundations weren't designed correctly for the expansive clay soils that are below it. That has caused damage throughout the structure, which has compromised its functionality, said Cooper. In the meeting, park officials shared that after gathering further data, including a floor-level survey conducted by Cooper's team, which revealed almost 10 inches of variation in the building's slab, they were ultimately advocating for an entirely new lodge. Cooper, whose team has been working with the Park Service on the project since 2018, said the current lodge would likely lose a lot of its character in the process of rehabilitation due to the complexity of repairs needed, and those fixes would be costly, making a rebuild the preferred option. Cooper said numerous cracks have appeared in walls and ceilings, and there is a critical area in the lodge kitchen where the roof is having to be shored up by support frames. Even dining room walls, which have retained their original framing, are in poor condition, despite being reglazed, and would need to be replaced to meet current fire codes, she said. While the Chisos Mountains Lodge has continued to pass health inspections, Cooper said the U.S. Public Health Service has raised significant concerns and strongly recommended a major renovation or replacement of the building. A U.S. Public Health Service employee assigned to serve as a consultant to the National Park Service noted in a 2019 report that the building does not appear to be structurally sound, while recommending a replacement or renovation with structural stabilization, Krumenacher later clarified via email. Krumenacher stressed that the building is safe for use and not in danger of collapse, per the structural engineers that monitor it. Project leaders said an entirely new building would not only resolve safety concerns, but could also serve as an opportunity to improve and modernize the original building design, which Cooper said is not well oriented to the visitor experience. One of the goals of the new building would be to make visitor arrivals more centralized and less disorienting, as well as better hide unattractive building elements like the loading dock. The new lodge would take up a similar footprint, said Krumenacher, in terms of size, energy, and water usage. The current lodge was done in the Mission 66 style, so named for a 10-year program run by the Park Service to construct and improve visitor facilities across the country, which ended in 1966. Krumenacher said the new build would aim to preserve key elements of the Mission 66 style, known for connecting indoor and outdoor spaces, while making much-needed improvements to the multifunctional space. We want to make sure that we somehow integrate the best parts of Mission 66 and also do a better job of harmonizing with the setting of the national park, because this building was built for a very small fraction of the number of visitors that we have today, said Krumenacher. Krumenacher said a well-engineered, complex foundation will be paramount moving forward. In addition to increasing the efficiency of the building by moving storage around and potentially widening hallways, the new structure would have improved ADA accessibility and be wildfire resistant. Cooper walked meeting attendees through preliminary architectural drawings for the lodge. The primary design includes a shed roof scheme with stucco and stone building materials in keeping with the overall look of the original building. A first floor outdoor terrace with mountain views would act as a catch-all for visitors, connecting to the visitor center, parking lot, and adjacent trailheads, said Cooper, making pathways more purposeful. The Basin's camper store will be removed and incorporated into the lodge as well. The lodge will likely offer more grab-and-go meal options and contain larger restrooms that would remain accessible when the building is closed. The new and improved lodge restaurant, located on the building's second floor, would host 150 seats for indoor dining and 80 seats for outdoor dining. The building's orientation toward the sun and the option of putting in solar panels are also being considered. Large glass windows will offer improved views of the surrounding landscape. Some meeting attendees raised concerns over large glass windows letting in too much heat or posing a threat to the area's bird population, to which presenters addressed and requested formal submissions of citizen feedback. In order for Big Bend National Park to move forward with the development of the new lodge, there will be an extensive review process, as the existing lodge is a historical structure. Krumenacher said Big Bend would work closely with the State Historic Preservation Office and the National Park Service in order to meet requirements. The target timeline for demolition of the old lodge is set for summer 2023, with the completion of the new lodge slated for sometime in 2025. According to the National Historic Preservation Act, because the lodge is a historic structure, the Park Service is required to consider public views before making any official project decisions. In addition to the public meeting, the Park Service will now solicit feedback from the public regarding the replacement of the Chisos Mountains Lodge. With costs of construction continuously rising across the U.S., it is unclear whether the budgeted $22 million will be sufficient to cover the costs of constructing the new lodge, said Krumenacher. Architectural Resources Group, Cooper's company, will provide schematic designs as well as specifications for a design-build contract. The park will have to hire another firm to finish the designs and build the new lodge. Krumenacher said their current goal is to fast-track that process. Bids will be nationally advertised, he said, and the park will utilize the same company to perform the park's water system upgrades. Major construction taking place over a two-year period will likely cause significant impacts, including road closures, heavy vehicle traffic, motel closures, and more, said Krumenacher. He said the park is still working on formulating a transition plan and securing temporary services. We are spending a lot of energy trying to figure that out right now. Obviously, there's going to be major disruption, but to what degree, we don't know yet, said Krumenacher. Some spoke up, inquiring as to whether current lodge employees would lose their jobs during the transition. Aramark, the private concessionaire company that the park contracts to operate food services and gas stations, would continue to operate other locations, said Krumenacher. And while some roles may change, he said, they are hoping to retain all employees. The Chisos Mountains Lodge is one of the biggest contributors to Brewster County's HOT, Hotel Occupancy Tax Fund, bringing in the third largest contribution of taxes for the county, said Brewster County Tourism Council Executive Director Robert Alvarez in a commissioner's court meeting this Tuesday. He said the county should be prepared for their HOT funds to be impacted for the duration of the basin's lodging closures. To submit comments regarding the Chisos Lodge replacement project to the National Park Service, email chisoslodge_comments@nps.gov by May 21st, 2022. To view the Zoom meeting in full, visit https://www.nps.gov/bibe/learn/news/future-p possibilities hyphen of hyphen the hyphen Chisos hyphen mountains hyphen lodge dot htm. Photo by Alex Marks, courtesy of the Chinati Foundation. The John Chamberlain Building will reopen on Saturday, April 30th, following a year-long restoration project. Chamberlain Building to reopen this weekend by Allegra Hobbs, A-L-L-E-G-R-A, at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, for the past year, the Chinati Foundation's John Chamberlain Building has been closed to visitors while undergoing an extensive restoration, spanning not just the structure but the land around it. Finally, on Saturday, the restored building will open its doors to the public amidst a day-long celebration of the project's completion. Locals and visitors to Marfa alike will flock to Highland Avenue for a free open viewing of the building, beginning at 10 a.m. and lasting until 5 p.m., with a chance to dive deeper into both the building's history and fresh renovation. Chinati curator Ingrid Schaffner will host a talk on artist John Chamberlain and his work in Marfa at the Crowley Theater at 11 a.m., then at 3 p.m. at the Chamberlain Building itself. Chinati director Jenny Moore will moderate a discussion with project architect Troy Schaum, landscape designer Jim Martinez, and adobe preservationist Joey Benton. Beginning at 5:30 p.m., community members will be treated to the welcome sight of Highland Avenue, closed to all traffic and filled with tables for a free dinner catered by Walter Burke Catering out of Santa Fe and accompanied by music from Alpine-based band The Swifts. The dinner is a revived tradition generally associated with the Foundation's Chinati Weekend in the fall, which this weekend will coincide with the unveiling of a long-awaited triumph for the Foundation, for downtown Marfa, and for the art world. The building closed at the beginning of 2021, and so the construction has successfully ridden out both an earlier pre-vaccine period of the pandemic and a more recent Omicron wave with all the uncertainty that has entailed. Thankfully, with no small amount of relief, we are on track, said Moore. We're really looking forward to a celebration to be able to have completed that project despite the challenges of the pandemic and the supply chain crisis, to be able to do it on time and on budget. Through it all, the worksite never had to close, said Moore, allowing the foundation to stay on schedule. On Saturday, locals and art lovers familiar with the Chamberlain will enter a changed structure, but they will hardly be hit in the face with the transformation. The work is more subtle than that, noted Moore, so as to be noticeable but not dramatic. When you walk into the building, it shouldn't be obvious, said Moore. It shouldn't feel different, but it should feel like a great improvement on that space, really bringing it back up to the ideal level that both Judd and Chamberlain wanted it to be experienced in. The foundation and the architects overseeing the project were up against the elements of the desert, working to repair weathering and reinforce the structure to better preserve it for the coming decades. The roof has been structurally reinforced to better cope with high winds in the region, said architect Troy Schaum of Schaum Shi, which oversaw the project. The roofing, meanwhile, has been completely replaced, and where part of the southwest corner of the building had been sinking into the ground and in need of reinforcement, architects underpinned it with a new foundation. Then there are the Judd-designed quarter-panel doors and windows lining the space, the top left square of which pivots open. That feature had been structurally degraded over the decades, but Schaum said the team was able to recuperate it by reinforcing the wood with steel. The struggle with that has been the kind of weathering of the wood and the way the wood ages, said Schaum. So a lot of the work was not operable, but we were able to introduce some steel detailing, some steel that's encased in the wood that lets it perform better in that environment. Moore said restoring those details allows a fuller realization of Judd's intentions for the building. Those may feel like small things, but they're kind of revelatory in terms of demonstrating Judd's ideas about the space, she said. None of our buildings are climate-controlled in conventional art industry ways, but to get air circulation through the building that way, to have those windows open and hear birds outside, is kind of beautiful. Adding to the aesthetic upgrades, architects installed new skylights to shed fresh light onto the artwork housed in the space, said Sean. The foundation has also done work to make the space more accessible to all visitors. Architects installed ADA-compliant ramps at the entry, plus ramps leading into the Judd-designed courtyard. The bathrooms are also now ADA accessible, said Sean. Making the building fully ADA accessible was incredibly important for us, said Moore. Each one of our restoration plans, as we achieve those, it's very important that the buildings be fully compliant with code and accessible to everyone. That includes access to the exterior courtyard, of course, but Moore noted that space had not been accessible to anyone for some time because the pivot door leading into it had structurally failed. Now the doors and windows have been repaired and their functions reinstated. All of these improvements allow for the recuperation of the courtyard, bounded by the adobe wall, which has been repaired with help from the women of the foundation's adobe apprenticeship, as a really beautiful international space that's a part of the experience of that art and building, said Moore. To be able to reclaim that and make it fully accessible for everyone is a really exciting moment. The Sotal Garden has also been treated with renovations, including replanting the plants that had been lost and giving a trim to others and replacing gravel. The building has also received a fresh coat of paint, which Moore expects will be challenged by the Far West Texas elements, but this time the foundation has a full maintenance plan in place for the future. This is all in keeping with the foundation's master plan, a multi-year, multi-project plan launched in 2017, aimed at the conservation of art and buildings, the restoration of the land, and improvements to the visitor experience. Now, the foundation's conservation goals have been further aided by a recent development that has coincided with the Chamberlain Building's return. The designation of a historic district in the center of Marfa, which includes the Chamberlain Building. The nomination of the Central Marfa Historic District to be granted an official designation within the National Register of Historic Places won unanimous approval from the State Board of Review in January. In recent days, the Texas Historical Commission announced that the district had been added to the register. The Chinati Foundation and the Judd Foundation together revived efforts in 2019 to garner the historical designation, after initial efforts launched by the city in the mid-2000s had lost steam. Ultimately, the boundaries of the district were redrawn to include Judd properties outside the downtown core. The 23,000-square-foot Chamberlain Building was originally constructed in 1940 as three separate warehouses, then was transformed by Donald Judd into one large space. Judd built the four-panel windows and doors with pivots, planted and designed the grids of Sotal plants around the property, and added the courtyard bound by the adobe wall. The building, with Judd's adaptations, stands out as one of the late artist's major architectural projects. The building houses John Chamberlain's 24 large-scale sculptures made of painted and chromium-plated steel, which the foundation has also worked to conserve. It is the largest installation of Chamberlain's work in the world. Saturday's visitors will get to experience the space in a new way, with Judd's additions revived by careful restoration work, the space flooded in natural light from skylights overhead and filled with fresh air from the newly recuperated windows. Moore said that trustees and longtime friends of Marfa are expected to fly in for the celebration. Additionally, the town is booked with weddings this weekend, so Moore hopes some of those out-of-towners decide to pop over. I think it's going to be a really interesting mix of folks coming specifically for the event, whether locally or farther afield, and then folks who are curious that something really exciting is happening down on Highland Avenue, and maybe they want to come check it out, she said. Photo by Alex Marks, courtesy of the Chinati Foundation. The John Chamberlain Building is home to 24 sculptures by the artist John Chamberlain. It is the largest installation of Chamberlain's work in the world. Photo by Alex Marks, courtesy of the Chinati Foundation. The adobe wall outside the Chamberlain Building has been restored with the help of participants in the Chinati Foundation's Adobe Apprenticeship for Tri-County Women.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, April 28, 2022. Groundbreaking Ceremony Held by Nathan Heuer. Additions to Gene Cummings Park will soon come to fruition for Fort Stockton residents and visitors. The City Council held a groundbreaking ceremony on April 25th at the park for the new walking trail, basketball court pavilion, and water reclamation additions, which are scheduled to be finished by June. The Council authorized an expenditure not to exceed $300,000 from the Economic Development Corporation for the park improvements at their regular meeting in April 11th. The EDC has been tremendous with the park upgrades they've done. They've updated the dog park and the kids' playground, Frank Rodriguez said. There are still a few things we want to do. Upgrade the water park, spray, features. The kids really do enjoy this during the summer. The pouring of the trail, which is scheduled to be the first edition completed, began a week ago. He explained that the basketball court pavilion should be finished shortly after the walking trail. The water reclamation project could exceed the June 17th target date due to the shortage of water tanks, according to Director Remy Ramos. But once in place, water usage at the park will significantly decrease. What we've come to find out is the spray park uses a lot of water and creates a lot of wastewater. It's actually more water than this park can consume. Every day, the spray park will run all day long and we'll have a pump system that puts water in a storage tank. Then at night, we press water out of that tank into the sprinkler system and spray the park. Follow progress of the park in upcoming editions of the Pioneer. Early voting underway for election by Nathan Heuer. A total of 5 local seats within the Fort Stockton Independent School District, School Board, and the Fort Stockton City Council will be decided in the upcoming May 7th election. Early voting for the election began on April 25th and will run through Tuesday, May 3rd. Registered voters inside the county have the ability to vote early at any of the following locations: Pecos County Index, Iran Community Center, Imperial Community Center, Cayenosa Community Center. Polling locations are open from 8 to 5 every day. Skeletal remains found in the county identified by Nathan Heuer. The Pecos County Sheriff's Office received news late last month that the unidentified person that was found deceased in the Pecos County in 1996 was recently identified. The regional program specialist of the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System notified the Pecos County Sheriff's Office of a possible match of dental features similar to the skeletal remains located in Pecos County on April 19, 1996. The Bexar County Medical Examiner Office was contacted, and a DNA comparison to samples from the remains matched to a maternal relative. Further comparisons and investigation were completed by agencies identifying the remains as Deborah Jean Houston of Houston, Texas. On April 19, 1996, a passing motorist discovered scattered skeletal human remains along Interstate 10 near mile marker 288. J.P. Robert Gonzalez arrived at the scene and conducted his inquest. Gonzalez ordered to have the remains collected and sent for an autopsy at the Bexar County Medical Examiner's Office. The cause of death was deemed as accidental. In 1996, the Texas Department of Public Safety did a reconstruction of Houston's face to show what she could have possibly looked like, but received no hits on the unidentified female. Family members have been contacted and informed of the match between their relative and the remains located in 1996. Gray Mule Wine Saloon Reopening a Success by Jeremy Gonzalez. The Gray Mule Wine Saloon reopened its doors for business on April 21st with a full house of attendees. New owner Michael Dufourat says the establishment served over 80 people, which exceeded his expectations for a soft opening. "I was so surprised by all the people who came out for our first day. The soft opening was a great success, and we're still planning our grand opening." When asked about his current ambitions for the saloon, Dufourat said they will be rolling out their extended food menu this week. FSISD hosts Teachers of the Quarter at a luncheon. The FSISD hosted a luncheon on April 25th at their central office for the 15 educators that earned Teachers of the Quarter recognition during the current school year. The educators were able to eat lunch with the district's administrative staff as a symbol of appreciation by the district. The teachers that were named for their respective campuses are Shella Rittenberry, Dana Sparks, Willie Rodriguez, Andrew Fellows, Melissa Alvarado, and Jameson Shack, Luis Paya, Perla Gardea and Carla Perea, Bridget Kelly, Kimberly Melendez, Belva Houston, Alejandro Gonzalez, Savannah Holland, and Melissa Calderon. The City of Fort Stockton will host a rabies clinic from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 30th. Car lineup will be in front of West 1st Street to North in North Street. A women's safety and self-defense workshop will be held on April 30th from 10 a.m. to noon at 401 North Gillis in Fort Stockton. Learn how to protect yourself and how to build confidence. For more information, call 432-299-2285.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, April 21st. Monahan's fugitive on Texas's 10 most wanted sex offenders list captured. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahan's man convicted of a child sex crime and wanted for failure to register in Ward County as well as Comanche County as a convicted sex offender was arrested in New Jersey and extradited back to Monahan's on April 4th, according to Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle. Glenn Edward Glass, age 40, was on the Texas Department of Public Safety's list of 10 most wanted sex offenders before his arrest March 17th in Essex, New Jersey, by the New York, New Jersey Regional Fugitive Task Force. He was added to the Texas 10 most wanted sex offenders list on November 15th. A Ward County warrant was issued for Glass in December 2018, when the sexual offender compliance officer contacted the Ward County Sheriff's Office after not being able to make contact with Glass. Quote, "Glass was allegedly living at the Silver Spur Hotel, but when the compliance officer arrived to verify he was still a resident of the motel, Glass had removed his belongings and was no longer staying there," Valle said. The compliance officer attempted to locate a next of kin for Glass as well as his employer, but it appeared as if Glass left town without saying where he was going, Vayu said. Ward County Sheriff's Office issued a warrant for failure to comply with a sex offender's duty to register. Comanche County Sheriff's Office had previously issued a warrant for Glass's arrest in October 2018. In 2004, Glass was convicted of sexual assault of a child following an incident with a 15-year-old girl. He was sentenced to 3 years in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice Prison. Justice of the Peace Elizabeth Polanco set bond for Glass at $10,000 for the warrant, and the new fail-to-comply sex offender duty register has no bond. United States Marshals from New Jersey and Texas and DPS special agents assisted in the arrest. School trustee early voting begins next Monday. Early voting for Monahans Wicked Paiute ISD trustee election will begin next Monday, April 25th, and continue until Tuesday, May 3rd. District 4 trustee incumbent Joel Greiner is being challenged by Steve Tuxhorn. District 2 trustee Raymond Reyes is unchallenged and has been declared the winner. Early voting by personal appearance will be conducted each weekday at 606 South Betty Street in Monahans between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. beginning on April 25th and ending on May 3rd. Applications for ballots by mail shall be mailed to the early voting clerk, 606 South Betty Street, Monahans, Texas, 79756. Applications for ballots by mail must be received by Tuesday, April 26th by 5 p.m. May 7th, 2022, Election Day, the polls will be open between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. at 606 South Betty Street in Monahans. To be eligible to vote, you must be a resident of MWP ISD District 4 and registered to vote in Ward County. MHS Skills USA team and powerlifting team honored. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Students representing our school district in Skills USA and powerlifting were honored at the school board meeting on Monday evening. These are students that have advanced past district competition. The Skills USA team, led by Director Scott Burkett, had five state qualifiers: Zachary Burkett, Mackenzie Burkett, Morgan Simonton, Carispa Carrasco, and Kariima Johnson. Powerlifting coach Fred Howard introduced six boys and 23 girls to the board and visitors who were being honored in powerlifting. Powerlifting state qualifiers were Renata Garcia and Yareli Rodriguez. Regional Spelling Bee qualifier was Sudarth fourth grader Yadeli Cardea. A bond update report was given during the session. The high school auditorium should be completed in time to be used for baccalaureate services this May. The administration offices are also in progress. Quote, "The natatorium is moving fast, and the west wall repair is coming along," architect Scott Reed said. Scott Reed is representing the school's architecture firm, Parkhill. Quote, "Kitchen equipment and utilities are being installed in the high school cafeteria now," Reed said. "The walls are about halfway up on the baseball and softball field buildings. The concession stand walls are getting close to being finished and ready for the roof to be put on before school lets out. The press box elevator shaft foundation has been poured and is getting ready for the elevator block walls to be started. The fabricated press box is being manufactured at Southern Bleachers plant and plans to be installed this summer. At the elementary location, the third and fourth grade wings, along with the elementary administration offices, will be completed by the end of June. Fifth and sixth grades will be complete by August if possible, but there is a possibility that the fifth and sixth grade wings will not be ready for students until January of 2023 due to material shortages. A short presentation was presented by County Agriculture Extension Agent Haley Lacaz about the Learn, Grow, Eat, and Go program that was presented to Cullender students. The program teaches the students about planting seeds and how the root system develops and spreads to feed the plants. Also about fruits and vegetables and how to tell the difference, which is fruits all have seeds and vegetables do not have seeds. Quote, "The children loved learning the songs that go with the learning process," Lacaz said. The growing songs are set to familiar songs such as The Addams Family and Old MacDonald. Financial reports and disbursements for March were approved. Budget amendments were next up for discussion. Budget Amendment Number 4 was proposing to move $300,000 out of fund balance for use in technology projects, $25,000 to be used for supplies for school police, such as a software program for Chief Orlando Orona. The remaining $275,000 for technology updates for the new elementary school. Budget Amendment Number 5 is proposing to move $1.3 million out of fund balance for the purchase of 3 new DXL Ultra Coachliner buses. Quote, "We can buy 3 of these buses where we could only buy 1.5 of the old kind we have," Superintendent of Schools Chad Smith said. These buses have Cummins 9L diesel engines for easy parts replacement and repair. The repair can be done by any qualified diesel mechanic in the area. They will not have to be towed to Dallas for repair. They also have many safety features, such as full front engine location. They have full composite construction, no wood construction, and fire-resistant floors. The motion to change the May 16th regular board meeting to May 23rd was approved due to a bad weather day and the spring sports banquet being held the same day. Jeff Jones, Director of Support Services, asked the board to call a special meeting on May 10th, 2022 at 4 p.m. in the School Administration Building boardroom to canvass the election results for the District 4 Board of Trustee election that will be held on May 7th. Only the board president and one other board member is required to be present for this meeting. A motion to continue the agreement with the West Texas Food Service Cooperative, which saves the district money in food purchases, was approved, as well as the Region 8 Education Service Center Purchasing System Interlocal Agreement. The board ended the public section of the meeting and convened into executive session to consider the contracts of new personnel, retiring employees, or those leaving the district. Resignation of personnel and retirees was addressed. No board action was needed, as all were at the end of their contracts. Board members present for the Monday, April 18th meeting were Donna Garcia, Raymond Reyes, Joel Greiner, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine. Absent from the meeting was Quint Melius and Bobby Almanza. The next regular board meeting will be held May 23rd at 6:30 p.m. in the District Administration Building at 606 South Betty Street. Special education is more than reading and writing for Klein. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Teaching special education for some educators is a calling that needs to be fulfilled. Such a teacher can be found here at Monahans High School. Lori Klein has been a special education teacher for 32 years. The last 15 years have been here in Monahans. After graduation from Monahans High School in 1984, she attended Texas Tech. Klein went to work at a Lubbock State school as a direct care worker and then into administration as an auditor of group homes in Texas. Klein's first classroom experience was in Lubbock in 1990. It was an early development childhood classroom for ages 3 to 5 years. This was the beginning of a rewarding career working with special young people. Quote, "The first 17 years, I moved around and worked at several different schools in several states," Klein said. After Lubbock, she taught in a multi-handicapped elementary classroom in Amarillo, then moved to Kansas and taught in Hutchinson in a juvenile correction capacity and a teacher for emotionally handicapped high school students. Next came a year in Las Vegas, Nevada, at a private school just off the Strip, teaching emotionally disabled. Quote, "I have to say this was a very interesting place to teach," Klein laughed. Palm Desert High School in California, and a classroom for emotionally disabled students, was the next stop in Klein's life. Then the last stop before coming home was to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, in a multi-handicapped elementary classroom. Quote, "Multi-handicapped students, or students with multiple disabilities, can have very severe limitations in their ability to walk, talk, and otherwise engage with peers," Klein explained. "These students may also have severe cognitive challenges. As a result, they are typically taught by highly trained teachers using a range of specialized tools." In 2007, Klein came home to teach at her alma mater. Klein believes that all her students, regardless of their disabilities, deserve to learn as much about daily life skills as possible. Quote, "It is very important that these students learn a skill," Klein said. Klein introduced a recycling program to her students. Recycling is a passion of Klein's. It is used as an important teaching tool. The class collects paper, cardboard, plastic, metal, and aluminum. The school is very supportive of recycling. Quote, "It's a large part of the vocational component for my students, and it is very important that these students learn a skill. The basic part of our recycle program begins with the actual sorting skill, which is very basic. Even lower-functioning students can be successful at the process of sorting, even if they require support," Klein said. As well as learning sorting skills, they learn social skills, such as interacting with others and community involvement, which includes appropriate social skills. These students are very capable, and it provides them with self-confidence, along with the satisfaction of completion, and this gives meaning to life. Klein has always been involved in recycling through her travels and teaching. Quote, "Some places required recycling at home and job. It has stuck with me, and I include it in my personal and professional life," she said. Recycling teaches valuable vocational skills while teaching kids how to work. Quote, "I have not had a student that didn't enjoy the work involved. They really like going to the time machine to see how the items are bundled for shipping. We volunteered at the recycle center, and it's a lot of dirty work," smiled Klein. The time machine is the recycling center in Odessa. They accept cardboard, paper, plastic, and aluminum. They work with public education on the importance of the conservation of the environment's natural resources, water, air, trees, and general ecology. Klein takes aluminum cans to the recycling center 1 to 2 times a month. The students who go with her are treated to pizza and some Walmart shopping. Klein would like to expand the recycle program in Monahans. They currently work with 3 recycle trailers used at high school and to pick up from about 20 individuals weekly and haul it to Odessa on a monthly basis. Quote, "I believe that recycling is a great skill to teach kids and hope to expand recycling in Monahans after retirement when that time comes," Klein said. Klein's future vision is to create a setting to employ adults with special needs who are limited in employment opportunities after graduating from high school. She would love to incorporate a meaningful skill as recycling to enrich the lives of students and offer service to this community to benefit everyone involved. Quote, "Everyone needs the opportunity to learn a skill and feel good about themselves, so I try to incorporate transitioning of students to the employment arena," she said. Along with being a full-time teacher, Klein has dabbled in coaching volleyball and tennis, but she has retired from coaching to open her own after-hours business. Klein Cleaning Service is an office cleaning business done in the evenings. She lets her students work with her in the cleaning business. It is hands-on skills learning, plus they earn wages. They clean offices 5 to 6 nights a week. Quote, "Klein Cleaning Service began in 2015 and will continue for as long as I can physically do the work. I hope to expand the cleaning service after retiring from teaching, but no definite retirement plans at this time," Klein said. In her spare time, after all the work is done, or early in the morning before work, she takes care of her animals. Quote, "The Funny Farm is the name my late mother-in-law, Jessie Hurd, gave our place," she laughed. Klein has horses, donkeys, buffalo, dogs, cats, chickens, parrots, and other assorted birds, and 2 monkeys. The office cleaning business helps feed all the animals, as well as teaching the students about earning wages for work. "One morning when we got up, I looked out the window and saw a cow standing by the gate. Don't know why or how she got there, but she just decided to stay. So, yeah, it is like a funny farm," Klein smiled. Lori Klein is one very busy woman, but so many special students and a lot of animals benefit from the time, attention, care, and compassion that she has to give. MEDC approves purchase orders for a broadband project. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session Monday, members of the Monahans Economic Development Board approved 3 purchase orders for items related to the broadband project. Carol Faulkner, with Faulkner Construction, explained to the board members the much-needed polybox needed to house the broadband equipment have been incredibly hard to locate. Quote, "Terry Duran told me he could have 250 boxes to us by June, but then called to say it wasn't going to happen," Faulkner said. "The polyboxes cost around $350 each and come on a truckload of 132. Quote, "We need 2 truckloads of boxes, which will cost around $90,000. Therefore, if we can get the purchase order approved for up to $95,000, then as soon as they're available again, we can get them in," Faulkner added. The second purchase approved for Terry Duran is for fiber, which will complete about 90% of the next phase of construction in the broadband project at a cost of $71,000. The final approved purchase order was to Titan Telecom for broadband core computer equipment at a total cost of $77,800. Quote, "This computer equipment is all a backup to the system, so if there is ever an interruption in service, the customer will never know," Faulkner said. Faulkner also said whichever company MEDC uses for the service will most likely want to buy the computer equipment back so they can own it. In other actions, the board tabled approving a purchase order for splitter cabinets because they also cannot be located right now. In final actionable items, the board approved a change order with Shalom Equipment, which will cover the installing fiber in the next phase of construction. Quote, "The bid is for $1.8 million, but we are only approving $1 million right now, and the rest will be approved as more funding becomes available," Faulkner said. Faulkner also presented the board with the status of the broadband project as well as the quarterly reporting associated with the $1.5 million federal EDA grant. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable totaling $54,900, which included $38,000 to Linear Traffic Marking for striping on Monahans Parkway and the school access roads, $4,700 to Maverick Engineering for a commercial master planning study phase one, $5,900 for payroll and salaries, $3,000 for phone, insurance, maintenance, and fuel, and $2,900 to attorneys Cotton, Bledsoe, Tye, and Dawson for LOA contract dispute, and $175 to Atkins, Hallman, Jones for county deed for new sheriff's office. The financial report, reflecting a balance of $2.3 million in available funds, and minutes of the March 21st regular meeting were approved. Along with MEDC Director Ashley Adalto, board members present for the meeting include Richard Irwin, Hal Upchurch, Brian Franks, and Eddie Nelms. Member Leticia Rodriguez was absent.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.